Remember something from what we spoke about yesterday. I know you remember something. What do you remember?
We had heard about the transformation of the gamma noise into supernova and into the form of Krishna.
Forms, because they were always the Supreme Lord. They didn't transform into the Lord.
And the cows into calves.
The calves?
The cows into calves.
The calves into Krishna also. Because they were already Krishna, but they were in the, they turned into Vishnu forms. What else do you remember about those Vishnu forms?
The three different descriptions.
Do you remember one point on that?
Yeah, I remember the blue complexion and the yellow.
It's two. So you'll have to pay extra. Okay, blue complexion and yellow.
Dhoti.
Dhoti. And what were the dhotis made out of? What is it? The cloth made out of? Can you remember? Silk, yes. Made out of silk. Yellow silk. But transcendent, not the silk of this world, but transcendental silk, and the complexions of Krishna, and the different visual forms were bluish like rain clouds, but not bluish like the rain clouds of this world. And around, Krishna's body was decorated with so many garlands, and so many ornaments and most valuable jewels, but not the jewels of the soul. But how can we imagine something transcendental from our platform? We cannot, because we don't have the concepts in our consciousness to understand what transcendental is. So sometimes the transcendental realm is described in the negative. That which exists here doesn't exist there. So we can say that the Lord is formless in the sense that he possesses no form that has anything to do with the concepts of form that we have in our consciousness. Because the form that we have in our consciousness, I mean, look at this microphone stand over here. So the form means it's limited. It doesn't extend to over here. And it doesn't extend to here, and it doesn't extend to the floor. So form implies on the material level a limitation. So Krishna is said to have the formless in the sense that he has, the form that he has nothing to do with the limited forms of this world. So how can we understand that sometimes there's a description in negative, vyatarik, it's called. Just like I can say, my kurta is not red. So it is true that it is not red, but it tells a truth. But in the negative, it expresses it, but it doesn't tell what it is, what its actual substance is, what its color is. So similarly, Krishna's form is not of this world, it is transcendental. So we use the word transcendental a lot. It's transcendental. The sound vibration of Krishna's name is transcendental. It has nothing to do with this world, even though we perceive it with our this world ears, and we vibrate it with this world tongue. So that seems to be quite contradictory. This question has been asked in several places of the Bhagavatam, and also answered that Krishna so kindly manifests himself in the sound vibration of the Shastra, in the sound vibration of the Holy Name, and according to the depth of our own realization, according to the, and also into the form of the Lord, and the picture. So, according to the depth of our devotion, Krishna manifests himself fully in these transcendental objects, such as Bhagavatam, such as the holy names, such as the, what was the other one?
Holy Dhamma.
Holy Dhamma, or as the one we mentioned, the deity.
Yeah.
It's always manifest, but it's our consciousness that causes them to sin fully, but the deity is always there, the holy name is always there, and the Bhagavatam has its own sort of siddha potency. It's inherently Krishna. So let us hear something about Krishna from the Bhagavatam. So what has been described is what Brahma saw, and he was astounded. His consciousness was bewildered by not being able to understand how the boys and calves were there when he knew he had taken them away, and yet they were there. But he had taken them away, but yet they were there. So as he was trying to understand the situation, his mind began to spin and spin and spin. He couldn't understand. And then Krishna, when he was in this bewildered position, because Brahma had wished to see some of the power of Krishna, Krishna began to change from the forms of the boys and calves into the forms of Vishnu, which were all manifestations of him. Amsa Kala, they're all parts, plenary parts. You know what the word plenary means? Sometimes there's a meeting, and you'll say it's a plenary session. That means the entirety of the members will attend. So it means complete. So when we talk about a plenary part, that's to differentiate a plenary part from an incomplete part. Like, say, there's the king, or the prime minister, and he has a secretary. And the secretary is the secretary of treasury. So within the realm of treasury, he has power to act, but he doesn't have power to act in other realms, such as secretary of state, secretary of the interior, and secretary of war. He can't declare war, for example, but in his little realm, smaller realm, he has his power. So that is not plenary or complete. So he has a part of the potency of the prime minister, but not a plenary. He's not a plenary part. So a plenary part of the Lord is practically analyzed, practically speaking, as even though he's an expansion of the Lord, he has the full power of the Lord. And what's the example that's given from the Brahma Samhita? He parts are even.
There's one candle lights another candle.
Yeah, so there's the second candle is an extension of the first candle, but the second candle has the same power as the first candle. And you can't tell, if you don't know which one is the original, you can't tell this is the original practice. But yet there is an original. And that original candle that lights all the other candles is Krishna. So therefore Prabhupada related quote, Ekala Ishwara, Krishna, Asava Bhritya, everyone else is maintained by him. So that was actually yesterday's verse. Psalm 52. So everyone, that all these forms of Vishnu were covered from head to toe by what?
With Tulsi
leaves. Tulsi leaves and Tulsi vines. And every living entity in existence, regardless of their form, was worshipping the Lord. So receive it. It's a fact. Everyone must serve. This is the actual dharma, the actual constitutional nature of everyone must serve. So service is the nature, and everyone must serve ultimately Krishna. We either serve him directly or indirectly. If we serve him directly, we're happy. If we serve him indirectly by serving his Maya Shakti, we are unhappy. So just like we say happy, and unhappy means what? The absence of being happy. But that doesn't describe in the positive of what misery is like. This happens and this happens and this happens. It's all, that's the positive of the negative, the positive of misery. So many bad things happen continuously. So that's what it means to serve Krishna indirectly. Then we call it the threefold miseries. Does anyone remember what the threefold miseries are? The Sanskrit?
Adidevi, Adibhauti, Adiyatyati.
And what's the meaning?
Miseries caused by body and mind.
Which one is that?
Miseries caused by our body and mind.
Which one is that in Sanskrit?
What? Mm-hmm. In Sanskrit, okay. Adiyatmik. Adibhauti means miseries caused by natural disturbances.
That's Adidevika, perhaps.
Adidevika. Adibhauti means miseries caused by other living entities.
Such as your boss. Did he cause you miseries?
Yes.
Did he cause you any miseries today?
Yesterday.
Yesterday? Did you get even today?
I didn't go to work.
How did boss become misery? So that's why serving Krishna indirectly. So more on this. This is the last line of the purport that we read yesterday. The last verse we read yesterday. All beings, both moving and non-moving. Which are you? Huh? Which are you? Are you moving or not moving?
Moving.
Where are you moving to?
You're always moving.
Oh, yes, that's true. All beings, both moving and non-moving, from the four-headed Lord Brahma down to the most insignificant living entity, had taken forms and were differently worshipping those Vishnumurtis. This is in the land of Vrindavan. He saw this Brahma's words. So they had all the living entities had different forms according to their karma, all their spiritual nature, and they were all worshipping the Vishnumurtis. Because everyone in existence worships the Lord, because he is the absolute truth. He cannot avoid it. It's our constitutional position. According to the respective capacity, with various means of worship, such as dancing and singing. And the last line of that purport was, all living entities are serving Krishna in different ways. For when they are Krishna conscious, the service is fully manifest. As a flower in the bud gradually fructifies and yields its desired aroma and beauty, so when a living entity comes to the platform of Krishna consciousness, the beauty of his real form comes into full blossom. That is the ultimate beauty and the ultimate fulfillment of desire. Next verse. All the Vishnumurtis, because there are several more verses describing the forms of Lord Vishnu. And this is what Brahma saw with his, how many eyes? you would have had her whispering in your ear during exams, you would have gotten a perfect score.
All the Vishwamurtis were surrounded by the opulences, headed by Anima Siddhi. All the mystic potencies, headed by Ajna. So all the potencies of the Lord had surrounded him. Headed by Ajna, and by the 24 elements for the creation of the material world, headed by the Mahatattva. Purport. Does anyone remember?
Siddhis.
The content of this verse?
Yeah. Siddhis is surrounded.
The Lord of all the
doing. Headed by Anima.
Yes. That was the opulent. Yes. Anima Siddhis. The mystic potencies headed by Ajna. So the cities, all the perfections, the imperfections, headed by Ajna. And the 24 elements for the creation, headed by the Mahatattva. Purport. They were all worshipping the Lord, standing. So Brahma was watching this. They all are meant for the Lord's service, they all are in the Lord's service. Purport. In this verse, the word Mahimam Bhi means Aishwarya or opulence. The Supreme Personality of Godhead can do whatever he likes. That is his Aishwarya. What does Aishwarya mean?
Opulence.
So that is his opulence. He can do whatever he likes. He can do whatever he likes. That is what everyone wants, isn't it? To do whatever they like at any time they like. With whoever they like, at any place they like. This is the perfection. For this reason, people gather their opulences around them. Their wealth, their beauty, their strength, whatever, their knowledge, to be able to act independently and do whatever they like. Without opulence, we are trapped. So therefore, people don't like that helpless feeling. So they try to exert themselves by gathering opulences, potencies, because shakti, that's the Sanskrit word, shakti means, what does shakti mean? Strength, it's power, yeah, strength. So with power, you need power to do what you like. So that is his Aishwarya. He's the one who can do just as he likes. He has full Aishwarya. Sag Aishwarya Purva. No one can command him, but he can command everyone. So it is not us who can be independent and do whatever we like. It is Krishna who is independent and can do whatever he likes. He can command everyone, Sadaishwarya Purnam. The Lord is full in six opulences. The yoga siddhis, the perfections of yoga, such as the ability to become smaller than the smallest, Anima Siddhi, or bigger than the biggest, Mahima Siddhi, are present in Lord Vishnu. Sadaishwarya Purno Iha Ya Iha Bhagavan. The word Aja means Maya, or mystic power. Everything mysterious is in full existence in Vishnu. The 24 elements mentioned are the five working senses, Pancha Kamendriya, the five senses for attaining knowledge, Pancha Gyanendriya, the five gross material elements, Pancha Mahabhuta, the five sense objects, Pancha Tanmatra, the mind, Manas, the false ego, Ahankara, the Mahatattva, and material nature, Prakriti. All 24 of these elements are employed for the manifestation of this material world. The Mahatattva is divided into different subtle categories, but originally it was called the Mahatattva. So this is described in the third canto, also in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. Maybe the 12th too. Was it 11th? Third canto, some in the second canto. In relationship to the composition of the material world and the creation of the material or material universes. So
What did he just see in one sentence? What did Brahma just see?
Krishna's opulences. Opulences.
His opulences?
Potencies. Mystic
potencies. Mystic potencies. And the third one?
And the material elements.
Yeah. And by the
Mahatattva.
And what were they doing?
They were attending him, serving him.
Yes, they were worshipping him. So the greatest were all opulences, all powers, and the elements themselves, headed by the primal element, Mahatattva. They were all serving Krishna. Brahmanas watching this because he wanted to see something wonderful. He wanted to, I keep using the term, poke Krishna, to see what would manifest. And he wasn't sure, and he was frightened. But after he saw this, he was, and what else? He's going to see more too. He's awestruck completely. He could not say anything, practically speaking. He had seen something far, so far beyond what he could conceive of Krishna doing. Because we tend to measure the Supreme by our finite capacity. Like, what's the example, the story that was told? Like the frog in the well. You mean the Atlantic Ocean or the ocean is 2 times bigger than my well? No, you don't understand. It is big. You mean it's 4 times as big as my well? No, 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 no. You have to see the ocean to understand how big it is. You mean it's 10 times as big as my well? No. You mean 20 times bigger than my well? So, what Brahma saw was just so beyond his capacity to previous capacity to conceive of, and this was just Lama Angsa Teja Samba, this is just a spark, a fragment of Krishna's potencies. Because no matter how much Krishna displays his potency, he's not diminished at all. Just conceive of what that means, try to think of what that means. No matter what emanates from him, whether it's universes or unlimited spiritual planets or Vaikuntha planets that are unlimited. So unlimited can emanate from Krishna and still Krishna's potency is not diminished. That's powerful. And therefore, Ekala Ishvara Krishna or Sarvabhuta. No one else can do that. Not even your boss. You should tell him. Who do you think you are? You're not a boss, you're just a servant. Because he's serving someone else, right?
Yes.
He's just a little fellow.
Pig.
Huh?
Yeah.
Just a little what?
Okay.
Pig.
A pig.
Excuse me. Okay.
Pig.
What's that?
Pig.
A Greek, is it?
A pig.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm just. To say that more frameworks that could be used. Like pig.
Yeah.
Donkey. If you call him a donkey, he's just a donkey after all. It's nice to come across innocence every now and then. The next verse. Then, this is what Lord Brahma saw next, that kala, the time factor, swabhava, one's own nature by association, samskara, reformation, kama, desire, karma, fruit of activity, and the gunas, the 3 modes of material nature, their own independence being completely subordinate to the potency of the Lord. They had all taken forms, and they were also worshipping those Vishnumurtis. So their own independence, all these, this is what controls the material world. Time is the great controller of the material world. Prabhupada once said, anyone who thinks that they are independent. It does not speak well for their sanity, because everyone is being controlled by time. Did you notice? Like every day you have to get up and you have to do this and you have to do that and you have to get older. And then eventually you have to get old. After you get older, you get old. And then after you get old, you stop getting old because your body dies. That's why people like to get old, because it's better than the alternative. Well, they don't like to get old, but they prefer old age to the alternative. So Kala, the time factor, is pushing in this world. So we'll just look at each one of these. They appear to be independent. We talk about unstoppable time. They're just working and working, but they give up their independence. Their independence completely subordinate to the potency of the Lord. So they're, and they're taking forms, and they're also worshipping those Vishnumurtis. So Kala, time, Swabhava, one's own nature by association. Prabhupada will explain this. Samskara, reformation. Sometimes some scars, impressions. Kama, desires, so all these that personified in worshipping Krishna. And the gunas. So Kala, Swabhava, Samskara, Kama, and Karma. And the gunas, six rulers of this world, the three modes of material nature, they rule. And this world, goodness, passion, and ignorance, they push everyone. And that, and according to one's karma, the gunas manifest into one's nature. So all these different things, karma, the gunas, and swabhava, they all manifest into what makes up an individual person that we either like or we don't like or we partially like. Sometimes you see a person, and immediately, as soon as you see them, you like them very much, and sometimes that's the opposite happens. You don't like them at all. Just as soon as you see them, this is just the configurations of karma, and guna, swabhava, the modes of material nature, and time pushing it all along. So all these, which the composite are all, when you put them together, they are all the what make up all the individuals of this world. Regardless of their what bodies are in, all those elements of worshipping Krishna are aspects. They had all taken forms, personified, and were all and also worshipping those Vishnumurtis. Now here's Prabhupada's purpose. It's a long one. No one but Vishnu has any independence. If we develop consciousness of this fact, then we are an actual Krishna consciousness. I am not an independent person. No matter how I try to be independent, an independent enjoyer, I end up just serving. I get deeper and deeper into service by my desire to enjoy, more entangled in service to another. So I'm not independent. I'm not independent. You are the top person in the country. We think he's so powerful, perhaps we think that way. But he has to serve continuously. Otherwise he won't get elected. Again. So it appears that he's in a topmost position, but he's only in a subordinate position, because everyone is subordinate in this world. So only when one understands one's dependence and lack of independence, then we can actually be Krishna conscious. Because ultimately the one who we are dependent on and subordinate to, of course, is the Supreme Lord Krishna. So what does it mean to accept that? What do you have to gain and what do you have to lose?
Ego.
Do you gain it or lose it?
Lose it.
False ego. What does that mean? You lose your false ego.
Maybe thinking that you can achieve everything without someone's help.
Yeah. What else? What would you call that? A person? Say if there's a little child. Someone like, how old is now? Sorry, now 3. So, does she think she can achieve everything without anyone's help? Completely, yes.
Full confidence.
Full confidence. So is it accurate? She's only 3 years old. It's obvious that it's that she can't. But we are just like that. Someone who is wise, they see our situation and I would have to say our arrogance, our pride. She has an excuse. She's 3 years old. What's my excuse? So to understand our independence, then we can, our lack of independence, our dependence on Krishna, dependence on in every way, then only can we be Krishna conscious, because then only we become humble. And we can take shelter of Krishna. If we try to take shelter of Krishna and be fully independent, then we actually won't be able to be Krishna conscious. And that's what we try to do. We try to take everything with us. But gee, to the Goloka Vrindavan is the gates very, very small. And the false ego is very, very big. So the soul can fit through the gate, but the false ego is too big. We should always remember. So when Prabhupada says we should always remember something, what should we do?
We should pay attention.
We should, should pay attention, because what's he going to say that we should always remember? We should always remember that Krishna is the only Supreme Master, and that everyone else is his servant. Ekala Ishvara Krishna or Sava Vritya. So what would happen to my life if I always remembered that Krishna is the only Supreme Master and that everyone else is his servant? How would your life change? You wouldn't be angry at your boss, or you'd feel sorry for him, perhaps. But why do we get angry at people? Because they act in foolish ways, or they act in ways that hurt us, or act and make our life inconvenient. Usually it's something like that. They do something that we don't like, and we become angry at them. So that, in other words, their false ego is interacting with our false ego. So neither of us is doing very well if that's the case. So you have to come up. Everyone else is his servant. Be one even Narayan or Lord Shiva. Everyone is subordinate to Krishna. Shiva Varin Sinutam. Even Baladeva is subordinate to Krishna. This is a fact. Ekala Ishvara Krishna Arsava Vritya. Yari Yari Yaitse Nachaya E Taitse Kore Nritya. One should understand that he's by his desire. Everyone is dancing. Everyone is moving. Everyone is acting. And I think I'm doing it. One should understand that no one is independent, for everything is part and parcel of Krishna. Okay, when Prabhupada says one should remember this, and when he says one should understand, we also listen very carefully, that no one is independent. That means I am also not independent. For everything is part and parcel of Krishna.
and is acting and moving by the supreme desire of Krishna. So does that mean, so this understanding, this consciousness is Krishna consciousness. Okay, if everything and everyone is part of Krishna and acting by the supreme desire of Krishna, does that mean that Krishna is causing all the difficulties?
No.
Please explain.
I think it's the attitude with which you serve Krishna.
That causes the difficulties?
Yes.
But everything is subordinate to Krishna. He's a supreme controller.
At the same time, everything is dependent on the three modes of nature, and he says in imbalance in the modes of the nature.
Okay, so it's the three modes of material nature, but they're worshipping Krishna.
Man proposes, God disposes.
That doesn't solve the problem.
Because man is proposing, and because of the sanction of the Lord, the things are happening. So
yeah. Okay. Anyone want to? Does anyone understand the problem that I'm proposing? If he's the Supreme Lord, and everything is under his control, and everyone is subordinate to him, everything is subordinate to him, this is the problem that Western philosophers always come up with. Then that means all the terrible things that are happening in this world, everything is happening, nothing is independent of him, nothing is against his desire. So that means that he's allowing everything to happen, so therefore he's responsible. That's like, if the children in your daughter's class, if they hit each other, or beat each other, or really hurt each other, and then the parents come in, and then the teacher said, well, the children did it, I didn't do it. Now what would the parents say?
You did about it.
Huh?
We'll blame the teacher.
Why?
She didn't take responsibility.
Because they're in control. So therefore, this is what the biggest problem that that people have in accepting the supremacy of the Supreme Lord. They say, well, he's the Supreme Lord. He just can't avoid responsibility. You want to deal with this one for us? You can be the lawyer of the Supreme Lord here.
No, because even the children have a free will.
Okay, they have free will, but who's in charge?
Teachers are in charge.
Yeah, teachers are in charge, but still, the teacher cannot violate the freedom of children.
So therefore, when the children are beating each other, the parents come and the teacher says, what can I do? What could I do if they wanted to do it? They have free will. What would you say? Take your child out immediately.
But still, Krishna is upadrashta anumanta. He guides. But it's still that the children go ahead and do it. Then it's their responsibility. It's upadrashta anumanta.
How can a child have responsibility?
I mean,
how can a child have responsibility at such a young age?
It's a crude example. As long as teachers...
I was the one who put up the crib, that example, not you, by the way. I was trying to trap you with it. Krishna says, you have free will. You don't really... But here he's saying, no one is independent. Right? So one has to put the pieces together in a subtle way, actually, to understand it. Because from one point of view, you explain it in one way, and from another point of view, you explain it in another way. So do we have independence or not? Well, Prabhupada's saying here, no one but Vishnu has any independence. Okay, so why don't we push this one for a while? If no one has any independence, then why are they responsible?
So Krishna says that yatha ichchasita, that you do whatever you wish to do after After telling Arjuna the entire Bhagavad Gita, he says to Arjuna that you do what you wish to do. So that means that Krishna is giving us some little independence.
What does it mean, little independence?
We have the independence to make our own bed, and once we make it, we have to lie in it.
Well, that doesn't... Okay, we can make... Is there anything else we can do? We make it? You sound like somebody's mother. Listen, you make your bed, okay? You're free to do it, but if you do make it, if you don't make it, you still have to lie in it.
The little independence means that we have a gem of choice. Yeah.
Gem.
Yeah.
It's nice, yeah?
Yeah. Acharya says that Swatantriya Ratna, we have the choice to make. So that's what belongs to us. That's the only what belongs to us. So,
but that's the only thing we can choose?
So once we have made choice, then of course there will be a...
Is it that simple, or is it more subtle than that too?
We have very minute independence because we are pushed by the modes of material nature is so strong that sometimes because of the nature, the modes are so strong that actually even the person have that independence, he's actually working towards, if he's pushed by passion, then...
See, now we're getting into one of the subtler points that's often spoken of, that according to the modes of material nature that we are under, we have more or less little choice. It's not independence, full independence, we can't have full independence, but we can either have this much or this much, according to the modes of material nature. That's like if you're on a plane and that's not Air Asia, and they'll come around and say, would you like to drink orange juice, or would you like to drink tomato juice, or would you like water, or would you like tonic water, or there's so many choices we don't want to mention some of the choices that they give you for drinking. So if that's like in the mode of goodness, you have a choice of what you want to, a little more choice there. Do you want tomato juice? Do you want this? Do you want that? Do you want orange juice? Do you want fruit juice? But still, you're on a plane going somewhere. And that you don't have any choice about. You're on the plane, you're going. But on that plane, you have these little choices. That's like the mode of goodness. You have more choice. But if you're in the mode of ignorance, you have no choice, practically speaking. Your destination is, and you're being pushed so strongly in the mode of passion, is the benefit of the mode of passion over the mode of ignorance, is that the mode of passion produces fruit, some results. The mode of ignorance only produces, according to the Bhagavad Gita, what is the result of the mode of ignorance?
Misery.
Huh?
Misery.
Yeah, and deeper ignorance. But passion is some fruit that comes from it, some result. And that is a gift you can offer to Krishna, and therefore we benefit. So there's some freedom there, and that will bring detachment. And detachment means freedom. It's when you're attached, you're driven. There's no freedom. So the more the mode of ignorance makes us more attached and more passionate. Mode of ignorance completely attached. Mode of passion extremely attached. And the mode of goodness detached. And therefore in the mode of goodness you can be more balanced. But in the mode of passion, it's being driven. Do this, do that, do that, do that. And the mode of ignorance, different.
Come back in 5 minutes. Take one nap.
can't do anything. So, no, depending upon the mode, so this is a letter that the Prabhupada lets you speak about this a bit later, but not, but very, very clearly. Yet. So, a better example than the school is what? What's the example of freedom and the
prisoner?
Yes, is that what you were thinking? The prisoner, because there a clear division is made. If you follow the law, and act responsibly, then there is one result. But once you break the law and act irresponsibly, and break the law, then you're forced to follow the law still more strictly. Mm. So no one has any independence. So that means, so there are prisoners in the prison house that have a little more independence because they've been good prisoners. That's the mode of goodness. And the bad ones are so bad they don't even allow them to come out. They don't allow them to talk to anyone. They have no freedom, solitary confinement. They're just put in a cage like an animal. No freedom. So Krishna gives us a choice. So once you make the wrong choice, then a very, very deep rectification has to take place. And that is to know that I am Krishna's. That's the primal. And as soon as one gives oneself to Krishna, which is called Saranagati, or surrender, Krishna, I am yours. I am yours. The giving of the soul to Krishna. That's a natural position, constitutional position. That's like the being free. A free citizen is the natural position of everyone born in the country. But the unnatural position is being in the prison. But the peculiar thing about being in the prison is that after you're there for a while, you work out your systems and you get used to it and you start feeling comfortable there and sort of like it. You know, they feed you, you know, you don't have any choice. They turn on the lights, they turn off the lights. But it's such a restriction of the living entity. And there's certain the law of the prison. You know, it's very, very, very strict. And learn how to work within that law to get what you want, things like that, and become satisfied in criminal ways. So there in the prison, no one has independence. But outside the prison, when the soul is in Goloka Vrindavan, he has full independence, but yet because he's tiny, he's willingly choosing always to serve Krishna, and in that choice, he's also taking shelter, but not of the prison energy, but the yogamaya energy. And that gives him ecstasy. Awards him ecstasy, which is his natural position. So some very foundational, fundamental choices have to be made. So one should understand that no one is independent, for everything is part and parcel of Krishna. So in the spiritual world or in the material world, and all the energies, yoga maya, mahamaya, they're all Krishna and his energies, and therefore he's called the absolute truth, Paramsatyam. There's nothing external to Krishna, there's nothing outside of Krishna, including us, including everything. Even your boss, the pig. He's also part of Krishna. And he's suffering. especially after you get even with them tomorrow. Did you give him some prasadam?
Yeah, I will.
Huh?
I will give him.
So one should understand. So one should understand this, that no one is independent. For everything is part and parcel of Krishna, and acting and moving by the supreme desire of Krishna, either outside the prison house or inside the prison house. It's governed by the supreme law, but outside there's freedom in a larger sense, but not complete freedom, because Krishna is the only one who's completely free. But Krishna is also not completely free. He's completely controlled by the love of his devotees. So in that sense, it's not Krishna who rules in the spiritual world, it's the devotees. So it's such a ironic, contradictory thing that Krishna, the Supreme Lord, has made a debtor to his devotees, and he becomes completely subordinate to them. So he's not a hard dictator at all. He's Bhakta Vatsala Krishna. So quite mysterious. This understanding, this consciousness is Krishna consciousness. One should understand that no one is independent, for everything is part and parcel of Krishna and is acting and moving by the supreme desire of Krishna. This understanding, this consciousness is Krishna consciousness. Yastu Narayanam Devam Brahma Ridradi Daivatai Samatrenaya Vavikcheta Sa Pashandi Bhaved Dhruvam. A person who considers demigods like Brahma and Shiva to be on the equal level with Narayan must certainly be considered an offender. No one can compare to Narayan or Krishna. Krishna is Narayan, and Narayan is also Krishna, for Krishna is the original Narayan. Brahma himself addresses Krishna, Narayanas Tvam Nahisava Dehinam. You are also Narayan. Indeed, you are the original Narayan. Narayan, that's a very important verse from the prayers of Lord Brahma in the next chapter. Kala, or the time factor, has many assistants, such as Swabhava, Samskara, Kam, Karma, and Guna. Swabhava, or one's own nature, is formed according to the association of the material qualities, so they all combine together to control a living entity, make him not free. They're all worshiping Krishna. So we'll stop here, but there's more in the purport. Quite interesting, quite wonderful. So on Saturday we'll read more Krishna. Any other? Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yeah.
How to solve that misery of child, teacher, and parent?
How to solve the misery? What sense?
Mystery.
Mystery or misery?
Mystery.
Oh. Well, you have to change the example to the present.
So the example, yeah.
No, that's in the prison.
Because it's
not fully the same, because the child, in fact, is not responsible. The parents are responsible. And when you put your child in school, you're giving the responsibility to the teachers to take care of the child, because the child isn't responsible. Too young, not enough intelligence to be responsible for themselves. So when the teacher doesn't take responsibility, then the parent will naturally take it back. So it's a different situation, because the living entity has to take responsibility for himself. So in that one, the living entity was the child in that example, but the child can't take responsibility for himself, or we have to take responsibility for himself.
Mm.
In fact, there's no karma for a child below the age of 6, 7, 8 or something like that. And therefore, in Vrindavan, when a young child passes away, they don't burn the body even, because there's no sin accrued to the child. Everything that the child does, it's the parents have to take responsibility for. So he just tricked you. Try it anyway. Of course he couldn't trick you. To what extent is Vishnu in the Vaikuntha realm controlled by the residents there?
They don't have that kind of love that controls him. So he remains the supreme controller.
He's the supreme realm.
He's the supreme lord.
There's some rasa, there's some relationship there of service and obligation.
So the master always remains the controller of the servant. But when the relationship comes up to friend, sometimes the friend can control the bigger, more powerful person by the power of their love. Friend, parent, and conjugal. So, because the other rasas, practically speaking, don't exist in Vaikuntha, so he remains supreme one.
So the servants in Golok, do they have any control over Krishna?
Golok is, no one's just, they love, in Vrindavan they love Krishna in a special way. Even the servants.
These ones are described in servitorship. Yes.
They love Krishna in a special way, and Krishna falls under their influence because it's Vrindavan. But not to the extent of the because when Krishna wants to play his flute, then you have, there's one servant who carries with him when Krishna's in the forest with the cowherd boys, carries 100 flutes or so. And he knows just the one to pull out. Because of, he sees, he can read Krishna's mood.
It's like a gold caddy.
I guess it's the other way around. that's trying to understand what it's like. We're using the information we have in the material world.
It's just a Monday movie that was out a decade or so ago called Bag of Ass. Who was a
Never mind. Because it is a Monday movie, so based on Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavan, read Bhagavan.
Yeah. Who's the golf caddy?
Yeah, the golf caddy. But the same concept that a good golf caddy will know just what club he needs, but you don't have 100 clubs. So where does that ability to know the mind and needs of another come from in the spiritual world and in the material world? It also comes from Krishna.
Closeness of the relationship.
It comes from Krishna. That's the point here. You have to have experience, and you have to know the person. But also, some days you'll just make so many mistakes, you won't be given the right information by Krishna. Mm-hmm. So those parts may be necessary, but they're not sufficient. It's ultimately Krishna who's giving Mata Smita and Gyanama Purana. Everyone is ultimately dependent on Krishna. The golf caddy is not independent. The musician who's expert, the sportsman, the good team, the best team doesn't always win either. They have bad days because Krishna. Mm-hmm. So many things happen. Also, so no one should be proud, in other words. Everyone should be humble. No one should think they're independent. No one should think if we have just a positive attitude, the universe will line itself up exactly according to our desire. It doesn't work like that. I remember when I was in the university, I saw an art movie. I can't remember who made it. And it was about when Russia took over Hungary, I believe they, in 1957. And there's this one powerful man who was like a Daduana. Magician. He was very powerful. So he was very famous as being, he could stare at someone and make them melt, practically speaking. So there was a picture of him. A tank, a Russian tank, was coming down one of the main streets, and he stood in front of it, using all his power. And that was, the picture was taken like 10 seconds before the tank rolled over. Because your power, however great it is insufficient. So everyone should remember that.
We are independent.
And everyone should understand that.
Krishna is teaching.
And if we remember that, we're not independent. We're dependent at every moment. Just imagine if the air wasn't there, or the heart. We're just not even aware that our heart is beating. It's not me who's making. They call it, what do they call that nervous system? It's
autonomic.
Huh?
Autonomic.
Autonomic. So it's automatic, basically, but it's not automatic. It just stops. And then you're finished. So we should remember we exist by God's grace, Krishna's grace, and our business is to serve Him. We serve Him anyway, not getting around it. We should serve Him willingly and with great devotion. Brahma is learning all these things just by looking at this. Okay, Hare Krishna. Stop raining, yeah?